And let's begin. Just give me a second. Is talking in any way of validity. You have to go experience and then delineate what bothers you. If you don't do that, then in my humble opinion, anything you're going to say is hearsay. And as you know, in Judaism, hearsay is not acceptable. If you see someone coming out of a cave with a knife and it's bloody, and this person with the bloody knife comes out and you go into the cave and you see someone's murdered, you can't convict him for murder because you didn't see him stick the knife into the murdered body. And therefore, hearsay doesn't work. So I would encourage everyone, if you have anything that bothers you in shul, go to shul. Experience it. And then delineate what bothers you. And hopefully there'll be not just complaints, there'll also be ways to rectify it. The third foundation for this book was something else. And that is an actual belief. Now, many of you know me and know me very well and know that I many, many a times talk cynically and say things that are a little funny and sort of belittle. That's indeed part of the way I deliver lectures. But quite frankly, it all comes from one place. And that is I fully believe that the Torah is indeed the way to go. And I fully believe that davening is one of the most unique and amazing privileges that God has given us upon this earth. We are not talking about something small. We're talking about something huge. To be able to speak to the master of the universe face to face, literally face to face, is an extraordinary privilege. I mean, just imagine this. Bruce has psychological problems. No offense, Bruce. You have psychological issues. You have to pay out of your nose and pocket to a psychologist to listen to your problems. And you all know that psychologists can take a very long time to get to their diagnosis. It costs money and it's time. And usually the appointments are not at a convenient time. It's not after work. It's not early in the morning. It's always going to be at a very inconvenient time of the day. And yet, you have a privilege here. You can talk to God face to face, tell him all your problems. And hopefully God will rectify them. Because in a minyan, we have a promise that God must listen to what you have to say. Norman, he may say, I listen to you, and my answer is, no, very good. However, even if the answer is no, at least he's listening. So 50% you're there. That's an amazing privilege that we have. And it hurts me as a human being and as a Jew that we have this amazing privilege. And yet many a times we take it for granted and we don't try to make it into an inspiring and amazing experience. And I'll give you a few examples that I bring up in the book. And I say this not from a place of, oh, I don't like the Gabayim, they're all wrong. I was a Gabay myself, just like Tzvi Mazel, who's a Gabay for many years in many different shuls. Part of them, I was privileged to his Gabos. I was a Gabay too, Tzvi. And believe me, I talk from a place of a Gabay. The Gabay's biggest worry when he comes into shul is to get the show on the road. Now, many a times, and I say this from a place that I've done it too, in place of looking for quality, we look for the easy fix. What's the easy fix? You come into shul, you see a guy, can you daven? Good. Did you think first, well, can he daven? Does he know how to say the words properly? Does he daven too fast? Does he daven too slow? Does he have nice nigunim? Are the nigunim inspirational? Does he daven for himself to hear his own voice, or is he trying to represent the congregation? Because in Judaism, we have a notion of shliach tzibur, messenger of the congregation, and not chazen. Chazen means something totally different. When you come into shul, it's so much easier to go for the easy fix. The easy fix is whoever wants to daven, great. And we know those people are. Those are the people that never say no. Now, if they're good, great. You got yourself a deal. They're good and they're available. But not always who's available is good. Problem number one. Now, you have to understand, even if you say, all right, davening was 2 hours today, Shabbos morning, 8:30 to 10:30, we got it over with, no one's going to think about it. If you think for your right mind, no one's going to think about it, then I hate to say it, let's call into question, is it worth it? We around this table during the height of Corona dealt with, is it better to daven outside in the cold, or is it better to daven inside with better kavana? If you recall that lecture was very important because we dealt with an issue that's going to continue to haunt us. Unfortunately, I don't think it haunts us on a regular basis. Because many a times, and I hate to say this, but I heard this from my Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein, in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. Jews love to have been in a situation that they have davened. They don't like to daven. Can I repeat that? Jews love to have be in a situation we have davened. You know, Shachris is over with. Deleted it from my calendar. Done. Okay, how is davening? Not my business. Not my business. You know what? Lousy. Long. Short. Talking. Not my business. So the first and foremost issue is that when you come to shul, you want to make it into an inspirational experience. And many a times we go for the easy fix. Just get the guy who's available. The guy who's available can ruin davening for everyone. And if you think for a moment people don't think about it, they do think about it. They talk behind your back. Number two, issue with minyan. You come into shul, you got yourself a chazan. He's not bad. But quite frankly, what is he doing? He's being a chazan like 20, 30, 40 years ago. Namely, people are very emotional when they hear some new tune on the radio, on social media, on YouTube. And yet when they come to shul, it's the same old. What do I mean? You know, you go to a wedding and you're dancing it up when you hear songs at the wedding that you love. They really are beautiful songs. Or before slichos, they have beautiful nigunim that ultimately bring you to high spiritual levels, like a shalosh shudas with the lights closed. And then you come to davening, and at davening, everyone uses the same tune for keladon, the same exact tune for mimkomcha, the same exact tune for kedusha. Now, albeit, if that's what does it for people, great, use the same tune. But I have very big doubts, because I've seen them before slichos, and I've seen them at weddings. They are dancing up a storm. They're closing their eyes and chuckling like they're in the devotion of the devotion. And yet when they come to shul on a Shabbos or Yontif, what are they doing? And this leads me to my third issue. While they're doing those tunes, the Keladon we've been hearing for 30 years, and the Mimkomcha that we've been hearing for 35 years, what are they holding in their hands? Does anyone want to answer that question? What are they holding in their hands? Where are their eyes looking at? How many times have you come into shul and you've seen people at the height of davening looking at the following outside of the sitter? They are looking at their phone. They are looking at their parsha sheets. They are looking at the many books they brought to shul in order to get through davening without being bored. And this is all because we have not made minyan inspirational. Now, I want to again reiterate, I believe minyan and davening is an amazing privilege. And it's our job not to ruin it. And the first two things that we have to do in order not to ruin it is A, think about it. And B, not go for the easy fixes. Because I just described to you what could be the price of an easy fix. So, within the book, what I try to do is exactly now, when we're about to go from backyard minions, outside minions, back into shul, God privileged me to put out this book exactly at that time in order to try and deal with the following issues. And these are the issues that I deal with. You could see the table of context online, and I'll tell you what they are. because I thought about them throughout the year, simply because we were davening in such ways that people said, you know, davening is pleasant. It's shorter, even though we're outside with masks, it's either too hot or too cold, davening's shorter. And I saw something else I couldn't believe. My whole life, most people I know don't come on time to shul. All of a sudden, we made davening shorter, people came on time and left on time. Wow! So I started to say, what are the issues that bother them in shul? And how can we make it such that we will fulfill the halacha written in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tzadik, la'olam, always a person, yishtadel me'od litpalel beveit ha'kneset im ha'tzibur, a person should try very hard to daven in a shul with a minyan, and that not come. Al cheshbon. Anyone want to tell me how to say that in English? What's al cheshbon? At the price, correct? Tzvi, am I right? At the price? Oh, good. At the price of an inspirational davening. There shouldn't be a situation where you're inspired at your zmiros, at your Shabbos table, at a wedding, at a pre-slichot event, at a kumzitz, and yet, in the most holy place, a shul that we have today outside of Har HaBayit, the most holiest place we have, at the most holiest thing we do, davening, talking to God face to face, that's like the last place we're inspired. That's where the phones come out, the parsha sheets come out, the svarim come out, because quite frankly, that's not where you get inspired. How do we do that? And these are the issues I dealt with. Number one, when should davening begin and end? I believe that the way we daven in minyans today is too long. And I make the point that I don't believe davening has to start with Psukei Dezimra or Birkos HaShachar or Korbanos. And it does not have to end at the end of Enki Elokeinu or at the end of Aleinu. I feel very strongly that those things can be said, the Yechidus, for two reasons. Number one, it does make davening together shorter. And let's remember, davening in a shul has three built-in disadvantages to it. I forgot who told me this, and I quoted it in my first book about davening, and I forgot who said it, but it was from a convention where they said, we're asking people to A, daven in a place they don't want to be. Let's be honest, our living rooms are far more comfortable than shuls. Shuls have air conditioning that's too cold, or heaters that are too hot, and the chair's not comfortable for my back, and someone took my seat, and I don't want to sit next to this guy, and this guy doesn't brush his teeth Shabbos morning, so every time he says Amen, his breath is going my way. So the first thing is, we're davening in a place we don't want to be. Number two, we're davening in a language we don't understand. Let's be honest, it's biblical Hebrew, not modern Hebrew, even for those that understand modern Hebrew. And number three, beyond the place that we don't necessarily want to be, davening in a language we don't even understand, we're asking for things that maybe we don't even think we need. How many of us wake up in the morning and say, you know what I need? Hashiva shoftayich kevarishonavi yoatzayich kevatchila. I need a tzemach dovid avdecha. I need this or that or the other thing. So there's built-in disadvantages to a regulated davening in a shul. So when you add to it, oh, let's make davening ultra long. Let's say things betzibor that you don't even need to say betzibor. I find that counterproductive. And therefore, I call into question, do you have to start davening with Psukei Dezimra? Do you have to start davening at Birkos HaShachar with Korbanos? Second issue, reducing recitals of the mourner's Kaddish. I have to admit that on this issue, I was very nervous because every one of us that went through a year of Avelus knows that Kaddish, above and beyond what it does in the next world, in this world, it puts the memory of my loved one on my agenda at least three times a day. And to play around with that is playing with fire. And therefore, I only wrote this chapter after I went through it myself. And I admit, I took it out, I put it back in, I started to play with the language because I was very, very nervous. But I stand behind what I wrote, and that is that I believe that the amount of kaddishes that a mourner says during davening is exaggerated, is problematic halachically, laharbot bekaddishim, and therefore I suggested to reduce them tremendously. And I gave ways of where to reduce them albeit to leave them, because it's important for davening and for the mourner, but to reduce them. Everybody here knows the very famous story about the guy that gets off the plane at the airport here in Israel. And you all know today you get off the plane, you have to do a corona test, you have to wait for your luggage, you have to go through passport control, it takes a while. And he's saying Kaddish for his mother, and he wants to get to a minyan, and it's taking time, and he's jet-lagged because in his body clock it's 12 midnight, but here in Israel it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Finally he gets out of the airport, he takes a taxi to the closest community, to Lod. And he goes into a Sephardic shul there, he makes sure he's safe, you know what happened in Lod this year. He goes in after davening, the rabbi says a halacha, and they say Kaddish. And then someone else says, I have a askara, and they say Kaddish. And this guy's getting annoyed, and he wants to get out of there, and he feels guilty, because he's saying Kaddish. He doesn't want to leave. So finally he says, don't you people know that it's absolutely forbidden, laharbot bekaddishim, to say too many Kaddishes? So Bruce, you ready for the answer? Everybody looked at him, quietly, and said, ze halacha? Is that a halacha? He said, yes. Ah, it's a halacha. Let's say Kaddish de Rabbanan. Third issue I dealt with in the book. The chiyuv to be chazen. Everybody knows you come into shul during the week. Is there a chiyuv? Is there a chiyuv? Does every single person with a chiyuv have a chiyuv to daven? Well, I'm going to say this very, very bluntly. Does the fact that your father or mother died mean that the entire congregation has to suffer? I have a personal issue. My father passed away. Does everyone have to suffer because of me? I was traveling during my year of Avelos, and I was in Sephardic shuls. And in Sephardic shuls, I refused to daven for the Amud. Not because I have anything against the Sephardim. Quite frankly, I think they're more correct. One second, Norman. I think they're more correct in their davening, in the way they daven. The chazan there is a chazan. He says every word out loud. By us Ashkenazim, the chazan's, as you know, is a traffic light. He tells you when to stop and when to go. Correct? But I could not daven like a Sephardi. So I refused to daven. Not everyone has to suffer because of me. Now, take that to someone that doesn't know how to pronounce the words. Take that to someone that doesn't know how to daven at the pace of the congregation. You have made a counterproductive davening for everyone. And I don't think that's a good idea. And there's very clear halachos about that. And I quoted it in the book about the fact that just because you have a chiyuv doesn't mean it trumps every single other halacha regarding who can be a chazan. Norman, you had a question. Go right ahead.
A friend of mine was asked to daven, and he said, if my father passed away, he made me an avil, not a chazan.
Good answer. Good answer. I heard that Rav Herschel Schechter during his year of Avelus also didn't. He didn't feel he has the voice. He didn't feel he was at the pace of the congregation. This is not rocket science, but many people don't know it. And somehow, the chiyuv trumps everything. It's like, that's the ish. That's like the end all. It's not true. The fourth issue I dealt with was tunes or melodies. I made the point that tunes can make or break a shul. Namely, you can have tunes that really get people involved, and you can have tunes that get people annoyed. And you do not want to do the latter. You want to do the former. And you have to put a lot of thought into which tunes you're going to use. I didn't say this in the book, but I've told the story here, that on one of the happiest days in Israel, Yom HaAtzma'ut, Shachris, what is the epitome or the height of Shachris on Yom HaAtzma'ut?
Hallel.
Hallel. And a gentleman gets up there for Hallel, and this is the tune he chooses for the epitome in the Hallel, which is the epitome of the happiness of that day. So Hallel's the highest happy prayer, and within it, Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Ki Lo'olam Chasdo, is, in my opinion, the happiest part of Hallel. And this is the way the Chazan decided to sing it. Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Ki. Now, those that were still awake after he finished couldn't help but notice, you know, the Chazan usually uses that tune for Unetane Tokef on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So I was intrigued. So I asked the Chazan after davening, may I ask you, why did you choose that tune for Hodu? You know, thank you. Just say it in English and you'll see how It's just uncanny. Thank you, God. You know, you say thank you like that, it's better to say nothing. So, the gentleman answered me a great answer. You know what his answer was? Why did he pick that tune? It popped into my head. It popped into... Who cares what the part of davening is? It's a happy part. Let's say it like this. Very much like I bring in my book, Rabbi Henkin, Zichrono Levracha, who passed away this year, said about another part of davening. He says, Tfilat Geshem. At the end of Tfilat Geshem, we have a passage that says, remember the 12 Shvatim? Their blood spilt like water. And he says in his book, people have sang it to the happiest Karblach tunes that they've ever heard. Because they don't know what they're saying, and they're just saying whatever tune pops into your head. Let's remember it's Simchas Torah here in Israel. Let's remember people are a little tipsy. Let's remember all of that. All right, remember them. They were spilt like water. Yeah, who cares? Quite frankly, we have to give a lot of thought into melodies that people know, melodies that stimulate people, and melodies that match the words. Repeating words. Do I have to go into details about the damage done when a chazan repeats words? You know, kevodom aleyolam, kevodom aleyolam. God's honor now is now all over the world twice. Kevodom aleyolam, three times. He's not only all over the world, he's all over the world times three. Does anything change after you've said it three times? Now, I make the point in the book that if this stimulates people, if this enhances davening, then I think it's a good thing. But if it doesn't, all you're doing is wasting people's time, and they're just sitting there. They're just sitting there waiting. Wait, when is this over with? Practicing to be a chazan. Practicing to be a chazan. I believe we have to practice to be a chazan. People should get practice because practice makes perfect. If you want to learn to swim, you have to jump into the water. But, Norman, you don't start out a guy who's never been a chazan at Musaf of Shabbos. You don't start out a guy who's never been a chazan at the night of Rosh Hashanah. You start him out at Ma'ariv of during the week, and you build him up. And many a times, you've gone to shul on Shabbos, you have a kid that doesn't know how to daven yet, is practicing, and they put him up there for Shachris. You can't fix that Shachris. That Shachris is over with that Shabbos. And people are talking behind the kid's back and whatnot. I also suggest that whoever is going to be practicing to be chazan, there should be someone in shul that's nominated to give feedback. And when you give feedback, you don't give it right away. That's impulsive. You wait 2 days, you call the kid, you said yeshar koach on your davening. These are the things you did right. These are the things I believe you could go ahead and repair to become a professional, wonderful chazan on behalf of us all. I also go ahead and talk about the Misha Beirach. We're coming back to Gabayim here, Tzvi. Sorry, but the Misha Beirach is an issue. Misha Beirach is an issue halachically. Can you even say it on Shabbos because it's a request? Misha Beirach is an issue practically. It takes up time. I davened with a minyan during the corona outside where I abolished all Misha Beirachs. I have to admit, davening was that much shorter, but beyond it, Kriyas HaTorah was that much more legible. I could see Kriyas HaTorah. I understood. It starts here, it ends there. Usually when you have a long pause between aliyahs, you don't even know where davening begins and davening and, excuse me, Kriyas HaTorah begins and Kriyas HaTorah ends. The sermon. You see, I didn't just talk about Gabayim Tzvi, I also talked about the rabbis. The sermon. I have a whole chapter on where the sermon should be and I give suggestions as to keeping the sermon, albeit moving it out of davening per se. I suggested that on Shabbos morning, if you have a Kiddush, then this is what should be done. Davening straight, Kiddush, whoever would like to say for the rabbi's sermon, you come back into shul, rabbi gives a 10-minute sermon, maybe even longer, because people now have food in their stomachs, they're not hungry, they're not thirsty. It could be a wonderful mini-lecture. But I really thought it was counterproductive to have the sermon in the middle of davening for the following reason. How are you portraying Torah to the community? You're basically saying, you guys don't want to learn Torah. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll force it down your throat by not allowing you to daven Musaf or Ma'ariv on a Friday night before listening to words of Torah. Now, I know this is going to be a suggestion that most people are going to have a problem with. They're going to say no one's going to stay after davening, etc. The bottom line is, during the height of Corona, people sent out their sermons on a digital basis and people listened. There are shuls that have a shir after davening and people stay. I've been to shuls where, as a scholar in residence, it was after the Kiddush and many people stayed. It's not like rocket science to do it. But I don't like the fact that like Torah is portrayed as you guys don't want to learn, so this is like I'm going to force it and stop davening for it. Not to mention, I don't think you need to mix davening with Torah. Torah is the work of the mind. Davening is the work of the heart. And you don't have to necessarily mix them in the same place. I don't believe a Shabbos or Yom Tov should go by without the learning of and teaching of Torah. It doesn't have to be in davening. And finally, my last two issues in the book. Learning and writing during davening. What I've seen in my life during davening is just extraordinary. I've seen chazanim return emails as they're chazaning. I'm not kidding you. As they're chazaning, they're texting. I have seen people in the middle of Chazarat HaShatz read a newspaper with their feet crossed. I have seen things that are just, I have seen someone that in the middle of davening answers his phone out loud and doesn't even notice that people are shushing him. I have seen it, and unfortunately, it has been terrible to see. Not to mention the fact that there's halachic prohibitions as to when you're allowed to learn Torah during davening. It's not so simple you can do it during Chazarat HaShatz or during laning, as we've discussed around this table. And finally, one last issue, my suggestion to induce additional requests to our davening during the Amida, the private and the public. I'm not talking about a request that you say for 6 months. That becomes boring and no one doesn't do a thing for anyone. It's just like part of the text. I'm talking about if at this moment someone's in the hospital and Rifa'enu, the chazan, says, in the middle of his davening, Yi ratzon bilfanecha, or in Hebrew or in English, because they're both kosher, in the vernacular, I mean, please give a refuah to our fellow member by the name of, and everyone knows it, and believe me, the kavana will go up. If there indeed is something acute, we need to mention it during davening. And not just after davening. Not like davening should be the same. And then after davening, we'll say Tehillim and we'll add a Mishaberach. In the davening, in the Amida, in the Chazarat HaShatz, it should be there. So those are the issues in this book that God privileged me to put out. And I give everyone the following challenge. And with this, I conclude. The cover of the book has a riddle. Whoever can solve the riddle, I'll be very, very happy to give them a prize. There's a riddle in the cover of the book. You see a gentleman davening with his hand out, and there's a text in the background. If you can solve the riddle, I'd be interested to see. But there was a riddle there that I put, and if you are bored by the book, at least you'll try to solve the riddle in the cover. So anyway, I thank you all for listening. I believe, and I conclude the way I started, that davening is one of the most amazing privileges that God gave us, and davening in a minyan is the epitome of that privilege. And I just hope that we make it inspirational and don't ruin it. And I've given various ideas of how to make it inspirational, and God forbid not do the opposite. And if indeed we adhere to some of these things, I believe davening will go ahead and improve. I don't think I have all the answers, but I definitely did and gave it my shot, gave it my best try to try to give both suggestions as well as practical information of how to make davening the most amazing experience a Jew goes through. Thank you all for listening.
I have a question about davening was not a thing that people were doing in shul. They're not doing it in shul. People used to do it, learning every day, by a rabbi or by your chavrusa. But this davening, this learning, it doesn't mean anything. It is because people are not putting it behind it. They know what's going on.
I believe Irving's correct in many ways. I'm not sure everywhere. I'm not sure for everyone. But he definitely makes a point, and therefore, I believe that A, we have to think about it. B, we have to do something about it. I've given many lectures on it. I published now 2 books on davening, and I personally am trying to improve it. And I hope that others will, God willing, join and give their suggestions and disagree with me or agree with me, which is totally legitimate. And God willing, our davening will be all the more inspirational. Thank you all for listening and wishing a good day.
$5,000 for ideas on how to make people want to come back to shul and leave their certain minyanim.
Wow.
The OU in the States was giving out money.
All right. Ideas. Good to know. Good to know. That's a very important initiative. Very important initiative because, as you could see, Norman, they actually think about it prior. They want you to say, okay, don't just go back to shul. What do we want to accomplish in shul? And the best way to try to accomplish things is not ad hoc. Is thinking about it not during shul, thinking about it 2 days later. Then you can accomplish things. When you think about it ad hoc, you know, oh, I'm in shul now, so like quick, let's get someone like that. Nothing's going to happen. You know what it's like, Norman? It's like the cop on the highway. When you see the cop sitting on the highway, you slow down. But you don't become a careful driver. Once the cop is not in your rearview mirror, you start speeding again. So that, I believe, is counterproductive. But if you think about it 2 days later, and you give a class on how to drive carefully, maybe you could produce careful drivers. I believe the same thing is true with davening. Shushing people during davening doesn't help. It's talking about davening outside of davening that I believe will help. So that initiative is very, very important, and I thank you for bringing it to my attention. I'm sorry, Tzvi. Just Tzvi wanted to finish a sentence, Bruce. Many of us do, but I'll tell you honestly, many of us like the street minyanim because of things we don't necessarily like in shul. And therefore, I think it doesn't have to be that way. We could improve things within the shul as well, and then fulfill the halacha of davening in a place with kedushat beit hakneset, albeit also, not a dirty word, enjoy it. Thank you all. Wishing you all a good day. Whoever would like copies of the book, obviously, you're welcome to contact me. Many of you heard the lectures on it prior, so obviously, maybe many of you know the book better than me. But whoever would like to see it, you're welcome to contact me, and I'll be happy to make it available to you. All the very best, and once again, my thanks to this Kollel. You are the reason that I've published 3 books. That's where I developed the ideas and the lectures. This Kollel produced 3 books. And everyone should remember that as they think about what does this kollel really, really accomplish. All the very best. You accomplish a lot. Take care.